EMSradio.com.
EMS information for the next generation.
The EMS Leadership Podcast is a production of EMSradio.com. You can interact with us via email, emsleadership@gmail.com, or call us 303-720-6001. This episode of EMS Leadership is brought to you by Audible.com. Over 85,000 titles for your MP3 player or iPod. Just go to www.audibletrial.com/EMS radio.
And by that clock on the wall, ladies and gentlemen, it's about that time of the week where we start our EMS Leadership podcast. This is Chris Subalero. We're going to talk about some great leadership topics tonight. One of the things is common pitfalls to the new EMS leader. I think we've all come out of the truck and we've all had the opportunity to take on our leadership roles. What are some of those common mistakes that we make? And I think that we're going to have some great discussion tonight as we talk about some of those common pitfalls. But as we start, this podcast is being brought to you by Audible.com, so you get a free audiobook download at www.audibletrial.com/EMSradio. And with over 85,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player, there's great opportunities there for everybody. So as we talk about some common pitfalls to the new EMS leader, I think there are so many things that come to mind. So before we get into those, let's go ahead and introduce our panel of EMS experts, and we'll start on the East Coast and making his reappearance with the EMS Leadership Podcast out of New York is Kyle David Bates. Kyle, how are you doing?
Good, Chris. How are you today?
Awesome, awesome. And thank you for joining us again. You used to come on quite a bit, and you've got some projects going for yourself that I want to kind of touch on for you. One is the PDU. So tell us a little bit about that, and so folks can jump on and start listening to that podcast.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much. PDU, PEDI-U.com, is a new project we've been working on. It's a podcast. It's everything pediatrics. Dr. Lou Romig and I, along with Dr. Peter Antevi and some other people, come on about a biweekly basis to discuss everything, well, small and whiny and drippy and crying, and she always yells at me for anything under the age of 2 months, because that's kind of my area of fear, is that 2-month-old under them. So Lou's always yelling at me for those. But we get on there, we get different topics. We've talked about respiratory emergencies. We've talked about head injuries and concussions and traumatic brain injuries with kids. Our next topic coming up is going to be about ALTIs, apparent life-threatening events with children.
Oh, very nice. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's going to be it's a really good process. We've been getting a lot of hits on it, and we're hoping to grow the website. There's also a lot of good resources on the website as well that Dr. Lou and Dr. Antevi have shared with us. So if you're looking for information on pediatrics, you can go over to our website at pedi-u.com and look some things up there.
Oh, awesome, man. I can't wait. And I've listened to a couple of them, and they're truly outstanding, and they gave us some great knowledge on pediatrics. So thank you very much for hosting that and doing that for us, Kyle.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And we're going to stay in the East Coast. We're going to head a little bit south and talk to our good friend Don Lundy in the Carolinas. Don, how are you doing?
Doing good, Chris. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm actually sitting in the entertainment capital of the world, of Clinton, Mississippi. That's where I'm broadcasting from this evening. And I got to tell you, it's pretty awesome here.
I happen to know an organization that's home offices in Clinton, Mississippi, I believe.
And that's who we're visiting, the home offices of NEMT.
That's cool.
It's going to be fun for the next couple of days to talk about the EPC course.
Oh, yeah.
And try to see if we can make that course better for everyone.
That'd be awesome.
Travel a little bit west and Austin, Texas. James from R. James, how are you doing?
Doing wonderful down here in Austin, trying to recover from South by Southwest.
How's the weather going on down there?
It is beautiful. We got up to about 85 today, and it's nice and cool at nights. And it's, man, we're just living the dream down here.
Well, enjoy those cool nights for a while, because in Texas, they're not going to last very long.
No, they won't be here long. It's already starting to get warm, and it's always humid.
That's right, it is. But thanks for joining us, James. And we're going out to the West Coast, and Patrick Pianetta is with us. Patrick, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, Chris.
And as we talk about, just so all the listeners know, as we talk about common mistakes of the new leader, one of the articles, and we've had Patrick on before, and he does a lot of writing for EMS World, and he has a recent article that he posted in kind of towards the end of February, which is Avoiding the Potholes, Common Mistakes of the New Leader. And really great article, Patrick, and thank you for doing that for us. And, you know, you had a lot of great articles there, so if you want to go check that out, everyone, go ahead and do that at EMS World. So, guys, you know, we're EMS leaders, and we had our bumps and bruises to get to where we were. And as we know, those bumps and bruises never stop. So if we think about the individuals who are in the trucks right now and they say, you know what, one day I want to wear that white shirt. One day I want to help my peers and make those decisions. What do you think, if, in your opinions, the first or one of the biggest common mistakes that the new EMS leader will make?
I think every leader that starts, either as a supervisor or higher, wants to change something, wants to do something. We come from the field where we don't stare at people. We do things. We start IVs. We lift them in the truck. We bandage their arms. And if we don't do something, we feel like we're not doing anything. So as a leader, the first leader generally wants to do something, change the color of something or change the door to something. It could be that easy. And I think the pitfall is not realizing that for the first 6 months or so, your job is to not do much of anything and to listen a lot.
So what should they be listening for?
Well, I think they need to listen to the crews that they're going to lead, and not so much you know, they can always say, what's happening? I mean, the conversation will take care of itself. They're going to know this person's in a leadership role and has the ability to do something. If you say, what do you think about blah, you're kind of setting the bait. And I think you need to listen to see how the system is doing in regards to how people feel about where they work, to see what issues you keep hearing from different people over and over and over again. And if you hear those, it's nothing wrong with saying, well, tell me a little more about that. Tell me a little more about the shift issue or the timing issue. But you need to get a feel on where your system is at ethically, morally, and professionally to know what you're going to do as a leader.
I think one of the other common mistakes that Don was dancing around but not explicitly saying was that you don't want to, when you're listening to your crews, you want to be very careful not to be very reactive. And what I mean by that is when you're hearing things, especially as a new leader, people are going to come and nudge you and say, hey, did you know about this? Or, you know, so-and-so is acting up or whatever it is. You have to be very cautious about, A, the people that you trust, but more importantly, before you jump into reaction mode, really take in the environment before you make a decision. Because once you move into upper echelon, once you become a leader, people are going to look to you, and people are going to, you know, along with the challenges and everything else that's going to come your way, people are going to want to see how much influence they have on you. And that needs to be something that's doled out appropriately. And the other big first mistake I think a lot of leaders make is they kind of bolster out there and they think that they're alone. And I really believe that a strong mentoring relationship or having an avenue of someone to talk to or a reference point, whether it's this podcast or literature out there that you think is pertinent, things like that, going in blind. And I think a lot of new leaders aren't perhaps aware of all the resources that are available to them.
Yeah, and if I could expand on that, Patrick, I kind of experienced this from three stages as I started out, and it's kind of evolutions of the same thing. First of all, when I moved out of the field, and especially once I was out of the field for a while, I was under the illusion that I understood really what happened out there. And it doesn't take long to get out of the field before you realize that things change and you need that field perspective. And I didn't value that as much as I should have. So as you're thinking about and working on important things that affect the field or communications or wherever you're working, you've got to involve the people that it has the greatest impact on. And that also gives you the buy-in. Then that set me up personally for the next failure point, as I got them involved, but I didn't create boundaries. They walked out of the room thinking that whatever they decided as a group was going to happen, and some of those things just may not be feasible. They may make good sense with the group, but when you kind of get into operationalizing them or implementing them, then you start to uncover other stuff. So if I was to kind of sum that thought up is involve people, but create boundaries on the front end with your work group or whoever it is so they understand what's on the table and what's not and where the information is going to go from that point forward. Is that a decision or is that a recommendation that then will be considered?
I think that as we start to transition from the truck, we always have those thoughts of, you know, wanting to do things better. And I could do this type of thing for my peers, and I can bring this change. And I think one of the things that people find out is once they transition from worker to leader to supervisors, it's not really easy. It's not an easy thing to do. And I think folks kind of miss that, don't you think?
Yes, and I think a common phrase that I use, and I get the sense that it's people find it comforting, as I say, I don't do your job anymore. I don't understand the challenges you're experiencing every day. You know, so tell me what you're thinking. Does this work? How would this impact what you do? And I just think recognizing that with them and in front of them adds that level of respect for what they do and communicates the message that you really care. This is about, you know, because at the end of the day, my job is supporting them. I ultimately work for our community, but my direct role in that is getting the field crews the things they need and the hurdles out of their way so they can do just an incredible job in our community. I work for them. They don't work for me. And if you can phrase things and involve them in ways to help them understand that and show them that you believe it and live it, then I think you can really create an awesome team.
I think that's absolutely correct. I think a lot of it has to do with the way that leaders communicate. You can have the same message said a couple of different ways, and the leader that can come out and emulate what you're saying, James, and say, listen, I work for you. I absolutely am not a clinician anymore. My job is behind the desk. And say what you will, but my job is to make sure that you can succeed at what you're doing. And I think the messaging, the way the message gets portrayed, is immensely more important than the message itself. Some research that's out there says that when you're having a face-to-face conversation, the words that you're using are only worth 7%, tone's worth 38%, and when you're and the visual, again, assuming that you're sitting across the table from somebody, is worth 55%. So it's one of those critical statistics that I preach about all the time at the hospital. Realize that when you're talking to somebody, how you say it is worth so much more than what you're saying. And what's even more important is the way that you portray yourself in a professional manner will project that message out that much more importantly. And I know we've talked about this on previous podcasts, but I think it bears repeating, especially on this topic, is great clinicians may not necessarily make great leaders. And it's incredibly important how they're selected. And I got a twinge of that from what James was saying. Be very cautious that if you are assuming that you are a wonderful clinician and you got chosen for a leadership role because you are suited for such, you really have to realize that this is a completely different realm. Unless you are a field, a senior medic doing FTOs, but if you're transitioning to a true leadership role, you kind of need to let go some of that clinical expertise and put the ego on the shelf.
Well, I think that's where a lot of EMS leaders have an issue is when they first of all, you go back to how they're picked. A lot of them are picked in our field based on they're really good clinicians. They're very effective at what they do, and they're good at it. So they get picked to be put into a leadership spot, and then they expect everyone to act and work the same, perform the same as they do. And that's not always possible. And it's always that phrase, there's more than one way to skin a cat. And I think that's one thing that moving into that leadership role, you kind of have to understand is that they may do things a little differently than you do.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the things that we take for granted is the fact of a lot of us, as we start to go through, come from the side of being really great paramedics. And what we hope to do is we hope to make great paramedics. But the expectations that we have are very, very high. Now, one of the things that I think is a common pitfall, and I want you guys to weigh in on this, is I just recently hired a new educator, clinical educator, and she came from the field. And I made it very, very clear to her, because now she's wearing the white shirt and she's got the gold badge. And I made it very, very clear to her, just because you're wearing a white shirt doesn't make you a leader. You were a paramedic first. You've came out of the field. Now you have to earn the respect and lead the people that you were eating lunch with a few days ago. And I think that's a very, very hard transition, because people automatically think that because I put a white shirt on, I'm now the boss and you've got to follow me.
You know, and I also think that everything that you do leading up to that kind of defines you. And a great example I have is a colleague that I worked with. He retired now, but he used to work higher class. He would move up when one of our commanders were out, and he would fill in. And that's kind of the format that we had then, and we've got a different version of it now. But back then, when you would step up and work in that higher class, you would put the blue shirt on as opposed to the white paramedic shirt. And that was kind of like a status symbol for us back then. You know, how many times did I get to wear the blue shirt? Well, when he went out and when he would move up and go out, he would wear his white shirt. And I asked him one day, I said, well, hey, where's your blue shirt? He goes, it's not the shirt that makes me. And he just kind of stopped me in my tracks, and I've often thought about that because, you know, you if you're talking with people about other people, how all the things you are and do, people know that, and that comes to the table with you as a leader. So you're always on, and it isn't, you know, you don't change just because the badge changes.
Absolutely. Yep. And I think that when you're looking at something like that, we talk to, I know, again, referencing previous podcasts, we talk a lot about perception, especially in patient eyes, the perception of care and how we shape that. I think a lot of times in leadership that gets ignored. And I think what people need to realize, especially new leaders, that when you're wearing that white shirt, when you've got the gold badge, when you are the guy that they're calling on the radio and your call sign has changed because now you are in charge, you have to realize exactly what you said, James. You are always on. Your job is to represent the company, and so or the service or the community, whatever fits your paradigm. But more importantly, when you're hanging around with crews, now that you're a leader, if you were buddy-buddy with some of these guys that are still – not at the leadership level, you really have to be careful of what you say and not be punished for when you were back on the street. But from this point forward, you can't bash an emergency room because somebody was snide to you. You can no longer insult patients. And I'm sure no one on this panel has ever done that, but you can't do that anymore. Now your job, you're the perception, you are the vision of what your organization should be portraying. And so it's immensely important to no longer try to be friends with your coworkers, be respectful by all means, and have wonderful relationships with them. But you really got to be careful about where you fit in the new realm of things.
I was just going to add, and not only are you always on, but everything you do and everything you say, and that's usually easy for people to understand as new leaders, shapes the organization, but everything you don't do and everything you don't say also defines. So if you see something that maybe isn't, you know, exactly how things should work, or somebody's backing without a backer, if you choose to not address it, then you sent the message that that's okay behavior. And usually, you know, my new command staff and people get the fact that, you know, anything I say and do, you know, I'm on the hook for. But you're also on the hook for everything you don't say and do, because we're sending a message with every word we say or don't say that this is okay or it's not okay.
I think that's really where, if you are listening to the podcast and you're like, wow, I would like to be a leader or a future leader, you kind of have to look at what you're doing now. You need to think about your behavior now, because if you go from bashing the ERs and, you know, ripping on patients and backing without backers, and all of a sudden next day you're put into a white shirt, gold badge, and you're trying to enforce those, you're going to have a very difficult time trying to enforce those, because, you know, what changed? And I think that's what you have to look at as well, on that philosophy of really you should be doing the right thing prior to becoming a EMS leader.
Exactly. What you permit, you promote. And being in a leadership role, you absolutely have to lead by example. It's one of those things where what you do speaks so loud, I can't hear what you're saying.
Yeah, and that's one of the things that we've said a few times on the EMS Leadership Podcast, is that what you permit, you promote. But one of the other things that I like to say, even as a leader for some years, is that leadership isn't a position. Leadership is an action. And we've all, whether you're the EMT in the truck, leadership defines as influence, and we need to try to influence people. But it's not a position. It's an action.
Well, I've got a different one to throw out there. This is kind of a little bit of a shift in gears, and it's one that kind of developed, at least for me, out of our labor contract. We had federal mediators come in and some labor attorneys and do some training before we negotiated our last contract, and I really learned a lot from the process. And I learned one thing that I use all the time, and I didn't appreciate it until that class. And it has to do with really understanding, when you're working with groups or even individuals, what their you have to work to understand the outcome that they're looking for, or the desired state, because we tend to take positions based on how we know to solve problems, and what that meant in that negotiation, and what it's meant many times in meetings, is someone will say, hey, well, I think we need to do this, and that just may not be something we can do. But really what they're saying is, this is the outcome we're looking for, and the only way I know to get there is this way. So you've got to ask those questions. Help me understand what you're trying to accomplish with that. How is that going to better serve the patient? And almost every time, what I found, instead of, you know, me being on the far one side and them on the other, is we're usually pretty close in the middle somewhere, and at the end of the day, we've got some common ground. And if you can find that common ground and connect it to patient outcomes, then it's easier to bring both parties to the middle to solve the problem.
And I think part of that is, you know, I know you're talking about, or at least my assumption is that you're talking about when you're communicating to your frontline staff. But as a new leader, I think part of what you're saying refers back to making sure that what you think is a problem is what your boss thinks is a problem. You don't want to go off solving problems that, A, either don't exist, or solving something that the person that you report to doesn't see as an issue. Don't ever assume that you know what your boss is thinking. And so that's just ensuring alignment. You don't want to – I don't want to say waste, but you don't want to go off putting out fires that don't exist while ignoring the inferno at the back door.
Yeah, I think those are all great points. How about this? One of the things that I often see with new EMS leaders is a failure to use their delegation skills. It seems that as they come in, what they want to do is they want to make an impact. They want to show that they can do it. But yet they failed to learn the art of delegating authority. How important is that for them to learn?
We've got a term for it that I use, and it's you need to be in the trenches but not in the weeds. You know, you need to be close enough and spend time with people so you're connected with them. But and I say that, and I'm completely qualified to say it, because I'm a weeds guy. I love EMS, and I like getting into details, and every day I have to pull myself back saying, that's not your job anymore. It's their job. Your job is helping them do their job.
Yeah, I agree. And I'm a firm believer in the you brought it up a little bit earlier, James, about you don't work for me, I work for you. And I know what it's like to sit in the truck, and I know what it's like not to have been heard. and I know what it's like not to have the equipment that we need. And now the opportunity for us to go forward and for us to be leaders is very, very important. But it's learning the art of using all the resources that you have really makes you the best that you can be. How about the thought of separating the friends from now the people who are workers? How do you do that? How do you make that transition from worker to leader?
I think that's actually one of the hardest spots. I actually lost a very good friendship over that. And it's difficult to do because in one aspect, some of them think that they can take advantage of you. And sometimes you have to put your foot down and you have to treat them the same way you treat everybody else. And sometimes they don't like that.
Yeah, it can be a very painful situation when you're in that realm of, assuming that you rose in the same place where you started, then you already have established relationships. But the trick is you can still be friendly with them and the families can still hang out. You can still do whatever. But there also has to be a mutual respect factor. And if the friendship is strong enough to understand that, then it's okay. But I completely agree with you, Kyle. You have to be very cautious because the friends that you have made or potentially will make because of your new status might be used for inappropriate reasons. They might be looking it's not to be everyone's out to get me, but you really have to be cautious about those that may be soliciting friendships for inappropriate reasons, whether that is to play gotcha or to hope to influence your decision one way or another. You have to be very cautious.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And one of the things that it's very, very difficult in that transition is now you've got to be the person to say, you know, that's not the way we're supposed to be doing things. And as you've touched on before, if you guys were kind of doing that, doing the things that you're now having to talk to your folks about, you're going to lose your credibility fast. You know, one of the things it takes forever to do is to build your credibility and your trust in the folks that you're going to help them reach the vision. But it takes just one little minute error that loses all that in a matter of no time.
You know, and sometimes the problem that friendship creates isn't with the friend, it's with the other people, because their perception might be that individual is either getting special treatment or not held to the same standard, or, you know, I can't say anything to you about that person because you're friends. So sometimes it may not have anything to do directly with that friend at all.
You know, and one of the things that's interesting is even the folks on your leadership team, if you tend to spend a little bit more time with one person over the other, you get branded as having your own little clique or having your own little, your favorite over your own people in your inner circle or your leadership team, which I find to be very interesting as well.
Yeah, I think, well, part of the issue is no matter what you do, you're wrong. I hate to put it like that, but that seems to be the position a lot of people are in. But I wouldn't shy away from the relationships that you've already built. It just needs to be a discussion. Well, first off, there's two different discussions. First off, there's one with the people that you kind of came up with, and it needs to be a very sincere conversation that just says, look, I know that you probably have a lot of blackmail on me. We had a lot of good times together. We had some fun, but now I'm in a leadership role, and to do that, you have to understand that when we're at work, we're at work, and that means that I have to hold you to the exact same standard that I'm holding the people that I don't like to. And that's something that we need to make sure that we both understand moving forward. Within the leadership team, I think that's an easier conversation to have. If there's any allegations of, you know, you've got your own clique, or, you know, you like this person more than that person, I think the issue there is just the communication. Why are you spending time with that person? Is it because you enjoy their company more than anybody else on your leadership team, or is it you're working on a project? Everything has to be transparent. It's when you start hiding information, or when the staff perceive that there is a blackout over what's going to happen next, is where you're going to start seeing a lot of issues come from.
How would you recommend, guys? You know, one of the things that you always find is as a leader, sometimes you've got to bring some bad news down from the top. And now you're kind of in that middle position. You know, you're the field supervisor. You know, you're hearing from the managers or your directors that, hey, you know what? We're just not going to get the raises that we were going to get. Now you've got to be the one to help disseminate that information. And sometimes that could be very difficult for the new leader. How do you recommend that they take on that task of bringing that bad news to the workforce?
I think part of it is just jump in and do it. There's no easy way to it. It's if you're a new leader and you're listening to this podcast, think about it like the first time you had to declare somebody dead and tell the family. It's never going to be pleasant. It's never going to get easy. It's just something that you have to do. Now, don't get me wrong. Don't do it without training. If these messages are coming out, if there's going to be reductions in force, if there's going to be temporary layoffs, you're not getting raises, whatever the issue is, get your leadership team together and role play. Pick the person that you know is going to be the biggest advocate and is going to scream and say horrible things and pretend like those people are and have a little skit and interact with that. Try to figure out where the pitfalls in the communication is going to be. The number one key when you do this, though, is you can't throw administration, leadership, county council, insert your government body, your leadership team under the bus. You cannot pose yourself to look better at their expense. And that's critically important. And that is going to be the litmus test of you as a leader, because you have to understand now that you're wearing the white shirt, staff are not going to tell the difference between you and whoever else that they are perceiving as the enemy. And, you know, a big part of that is the way you phrase that message. It can't be phrased as an adversarial relationship. Explain it. Be transparent. If it's something that requires that they need to understand the financials, they don't have to be CPAs, but you can definitely show them something that says we made $10,000 and it costs us $20,000. You know, anybody with some common sense can put those numbers together and say, this equation's out of whack. But don't ever hide from it. You just as soon as it's appropriate, and as soon as you feel, I don't want to say comfortable, because I'm pretty sure it's never going to be a conversation that gets comfortable or easy to make. But whenever you feel confident that you can go out with the correct message, do so as soon as it's appropriate.
We've got a phrase we call it: "No carrying water." You own it, Patrick. I'm right there with you. You got to be prepared. But at the end of the day, I'm responsible for everything that's negative. And if something positive happened, then that gets pushed down to the people that work for me. So the buck stops with me.
I think that's another good term that you brought up, was negative and positive. And I think the one thing you have to understand as an EMS leadership is just basic operant conditioning, and that people respond a lot better to positive reinforcement than they do negative. But it's so easy to do the negative reinforcement. It's so easy to yell at somebody. It's so easy to discipline and write people up. And that is where you get a lot of the animosity going on. And that's actually where you can end up into trouble legally as well. But looking at the operant conditioning and looking at positive reinforcement, you know, letting people know when they do a good job, that, for some reason, that is so hard for people to do. And those leaders that we look up to, those leaders that are successful, are very good at that.
Absolutely. You need to build an emotional bank account with your staff. So that means as soon as you get the white shirt, going out of your way to recognize when people are doing things right. Kyle, I think you're absolutely dead on the ball on that. You have to be able to start making a positive balance in that emotional bank account, because no matter what you do, unless you're Pollyanna, eventually you're going to have to tell this person some bad news, whether it's something as simple as, hey, you didn't back up with a backer, to we've had this discussion multiple times, you're not getting any better, we need to start, you need to understand that you are most likely looking at termination. You can't have those conversations unless you have some currency in that emotional bank account. And so even if it's mundane, what you're going to praise, what you're going to recognize, what you're going to say is good is what's going to get repeated.
And that's got to be a conscious process, because we will get busy. I do it. We all do it by nature. As a paramedic, as a clinician, our focus is not dealing with the stuff that's working. It's fixing the things that are broke. And we get caught up in our day and in our week and our month and in the position and in the job, and the stuff that's working works. But it is a constant effort. You have to, at least I do. You know, I've got to be conditioned to look for those things. And whether it's a personal phone call or throwing something up on our website saying, hey, this group did a great job, and helping and getting my staff on board saying, I need you looking for these things so we can reinforce the positive. And when we have the things, the negative things that we have to deal with, we can deal with them. But that is hard for us as paramedics. We're not built that way. We're not trained that way.
Absolutely. I agree one wholeheartedly. I mean, you never, you know, a normal sinus rhythm doesn't do anything for us. You show us V-fib and all of a sudden we get excited. I think that's, you're absolutely right. It's the way we're programmed. But the other thing is it doesn't have to be anything monumental. Anytime you get something from a patient that said, you know, Chris, the paramedic was awesome, you need to make sure that you articulate that to Chris immediately. So that way he gets that little apple. And even if he says he doesn't need it and I don't need anything unless I'm doing something wrong, is, you know what, go out on a limb and say nice things about people anyway. But, I mean, simple things. If you just had that coaching, like the example we were using before about backing up without a backer, if you just had that coaching session with that employee, you've told them, it may not have been a verbal warning yet. It might have been just a, hey, just so you know. Make sure the next time you see that guy backing up with a backer, go up to him, pat him on the back, say, hey, I saw you doing it. I really appreciate your commitment to safety here. Little things, little deposits will make absolutely enormous returns in that bank.
Yep. Here's how you test that, because we've had our negative experiences, and we work hard. You know, we're never good enough at it. But get some of your command staff together and go show up at a station. Just pull in. See how nervous the employees get. And if they say stuff like, who's in trouble? Well, then the message is, okay, you know, the only time you show up here is when there's something negative. And we gather up as many people as we could find, directors and assistant city managers sometime if we can get them, and show up at a station with a letter from a patient or something that's happened and do some on-the-spot recognition. And we do it in their world, not ours. Instead of pulling them up into our meeting where only us, only the leadership team can see it, we go out there in their peer group and make a big deal out of it, because it's a big deal for them.
I also think you have to be cautious, because there's also something, you know, we've all heard of the golden rule, you know, do unto others as we wish done unto us. But I don't know if you've ever heard of the platinum rule, do unto others as they wish done upon them. Some people love accolades. Some people love the balloons, the signs, hey, you did a great job. And that's their reinforcement. Some people, that type of accolades can actually turn them off. And it becomes negative reinforcement, so they won't do it. Sometimes those people just would rather have, you know, the director come up to them privately and say, hey, good job. And knowing your staff and knowing who they are and how they like that is a very difficult thing, but can also be very rewarding and beneficial to you.
You know, and I think that you're absolutely right, Kyle. And one of the things that James said that I think is really important that I think we forget is, it's always good to do things in the environment where the paramedics are working. One of the things that I had happen as I transitioned as a new leader up here in St. Louis was anytime something happened to where negative information had to get passed on, they were always calling people from the field into the office. I said, you know what? Let's go to them. Let's not bring them to us. Let's go see them and talk to them. So when we talk about giving the positives and we talk about giving the feedback, you can have a conversation of, you know, I noticed you backed that ambulance without a spotter. Let's make sure we don't do that again. Well, now you just had some curbside coaching, which I think could be very effective, and you're not in between a desk. You don't have the door closed with somebody taking notes. And I think it's those types of things that we all forget as leaders that are really important to do.
And I think a big part of that is not so much in that example, but if you're having issues with some other form of compliance, is can you tell me why you did this behavior? Is it uncomfortable? Is it cumbersome? Tell me where the roadblocks are. And like the famous quote one of you were saying was, my job is to take the hurdles out of your way. So if you could, can you give me a valid reason? And being sincere about it too. You can't come off sarcastic or else you're going to lose all of that effort that you're putting into it. But be sincere, you know, why aren't you following this behavior? Is it, are you not wearing your safety helmet because it's uncomfortable? Or is the strap chafing? What give me some insight. And then when whatever they tell you, if it's valid, then do your best to fix it. But that's where you're going to gain some – that's where they're going to see and meet you in the middle. They want to – they're seeing that you're trying to help them do what they're supposed to do.
I think the one phrase that I've used before, and I kind of use this with people that maybe I know and okay, and everything's been going well, and then all of a sudden we start having some issues, is just kind of, I don't want to say grabbing them, but you know, going out into the field or taking them to the truck and just looking at them saying, everything okay? Because I think a lot of times some issues arise because of baggage that's brought into the workplace from outside. And just sometimes that shoulder, that ear, some of them will be like, no, it's fine. But some of them will actually open up to you.
And I think that's a good thing, but I think it can also be very trepidatious, I should say. Sorry, wrong word. And I think hopefully your organizations have an EAP, an employee assistance program. But if your staff are opening up to you about things that are inappropriate at the workplace, such as personal issues with their significant other, stress, things like that, you're going to have a way to parlay that to an appropriate designee.
Oh, absolutely.
But I think you're absolutely right. I don't want your message to get lost. You're absolutely correct. Always making sure that how are your employees doing is incredibly important. But more than just asking how are things doing, have a set of pointed questions. Look for specific things in your employees. I mean, rounding has been proven to be successful. It's incredibly well created, and when it's done effectively, you will be amazed at the gains you will make.
Chris, you mentioned something a couple of minutes ago, and I just want to briefly touch on it for the new leaders out there. You mentioned, don't bring them in and set behind your desk. I think an important message, at least for me, is my desk is where I work at. It's not where I lead at. If I'm going to have a conversation, when somebody walks in my office, I go around and sit with them and talk with them, or I go to where they are. Certainly there's a whole science behind power positions in the room and behind the desk and stuff. That doesn't work for me. If we're going to go out and accomplish a mission together, then we're going to work together.
Yeah, I like that. I've never heard that before, and I think, James, we may have to steal that from you. My desk is where I work at. It's not where I lead from. And a lot of times we think that. A lot of times we get caught, now we have the bigger chair, and now we have the desk, and, this is kind of where we, all pick up our leadership skills from. But, you've got to be out there. You've got to be in the forefront, and I think that's something that gets lost on all of us. We've talked about Ernie Rodriguez a couple times on the EMS Leadership Podcast, and of course he's the EMS chief for Austin, Travis County EMS in Austin, Texas. And when we worked together in Fort Worth, every so often I'd come back to my office and my chair would be missing. And Ernie would come in and steal my chair, and that was his way of saying, you're in the office too much, get out. And it was a very important lesson. So now I think I want to touch on one more thing, and then maybe we can start thinking about closing and kind of giving a final thoughts to our listeners. One of the things that you hear a lot of when the individuals are getting ready to move from the field into leadership, they always say that I can do a better job than the bosses or the leaders that we have now. How important is it to align yourself with the goals and the visions of your boss and not really think that you can single-handedly change the organization?
I think that is a quick way to career suicide. If you're not – you can't throw the people that promoted you under the bus. That's just a terrible idea. Now, you may think that you've got the greatest process improvement idea to ever come up from the field ranks because the suits don't know what's going on in the back of the ambulances. But you have to, again, it comes back to how are you messaging that? The communications, the messages that you say as a leader are going to have more weight than your fellow peers that are paramedics with you, a few weeks ago. You have to be incredibly cautious about that. You got to make sure that what you're working on is what your boss wants you to be working on, or else it can lead to some very stressful conversations later down the road.
And, depending on the size of the organization and the resources and, just the overall bandwidth, for lack of a better term, trying to grow people before the day you hand them the keys to the office. You know, in our case, you know, training, information, involving people in committees, projects, getting them ready and prepared for that next step, which is a captain or a clinical specialist level is the other name we use for it in our organization. And our clinical specialists were putting through training. They're having opportunities to move up and be involved in bigger projects. So by the time we're ready to hand them those keys and say, okay, you know, time to take the next step, you know, we've already tried each other on for size and you have a better feel for what the challenges are. So hopefully you can start to open people's eyes up to the things that they may not be able to see from their perspective, and help them to realize that what may seem very simple without any obstacles down here, when you get up here and understand all the dynamics, there is probably a lot more to it. And if there wasn't, you know, it would already be happening.
And I think a big part of that is the eye-opening experience, especially for new leaders. And if you are a new leader listening to this, realize that there's a lot of resources out there, whether it's joining an organization like ACHE, which is the American College of Healthcare Executives, or HFMA, or whatever it is. Those are typically more hospital-based associations. And I know that there's the NAEMT and lots of other things. But do some research, or if you're trying to mentor someone that you believe is going to be a good leader in the future, have them have the resources out there. There's tons of books out there that are absolutely phenomenal. My personal favorite is How to Win Friends and Influence People by Dale Carnegie. I think that's a mandatory staple for anyone that's going to lead people. Primal Leadership is another great example. There's a lot of stuff out there that can help other people be successful. And I totally agree with you, James, about trying them on for size before you promote them and all these other wonderful tactics. But, you know, there's also a certain didactic amount of information and education out there that I think leaders need to realize is out there. They can't just be put into the fire and hope that they succeed. There's it's, you know, a process. And I think that goes to their perspective. Once they get higher up in the organization, once we have kind of come up, as you will, from being a front level provider to realizing, oh, I have budgetary concerns at this point. Well, I've never seen a P&L sheet, or, you know, what does this mean? I think every ambulance should have, you know, wings on it. Well, there's going to be implications for that. And here's why the field medic might think that's brilliant, but your director is crying in the corner. there's always a broader perspective the higher you go up on the food chain. And I think exposure to that and training to understand the new responsibilities is imperative.
Yeah. And Patrick, you brought up something that is real important, and this might even make a good podcast. As a new leader, you're going to be subjected to and have access to and hopefully be looking at a lot of different types of toolkits out there. Being part of the city of Austin in Travis County like we are, you know, over the 26 years I've been with the city, we've went through a program called Organizational Alignment, Total Quality Management, QM, Lean. We're Six Sigma now. So there's an overwhelming amount of information, resources that's out there that you're just going to have to sort through. And if I was to give anyone, you know, 30 seconds worth of advice, is almost any of it can work in the right environment. You have to find what's going to fit for you, what works for you and your style and the operational tempo and style of your organization, first of all. And second of all, realize that there's a lot of tools and things that you can do to organize meetings and work toward projects and outcomes. But at the end of the day, you're leading the organization. And they're just tools. They're not going to solve the problem for you. They may help the discovery process as you work toward a solution.
Yeah, and I agree. And I think that the more we have the opportunity to learn, the more we have the opportunity to practice. You know, it's like being a good paramedic. You know, we don't come out of school and we're excellent paramedics. And it's the same thing as a new leader. We need to go ahead and we need to have those experiences. We need to learn from our mistakes and we need to move forward. You know, guys, what a great topic. And you know, it's one of those topics that we could sit around and we could chat about for another hour. And, you know, I like your idea, James, about, you know, the idea for that podcast. Maybe we'll go ahead and bring that. So if we go ahead now and think about our closing thoughts, and if we can just give a quick little overview or a quick little tip to those new leaders out there, how to be successful. Maybe, Kyle, we could start with you. What do you share with them?
I did the leadership thing. And the thing I got to tell you is don't forget where you came from. Don't forget your roots. Think back to how a leader may have impressed you and what they did and what you liked about it. But also think about some of those leaders that weren't really such leaders but more managers, and that you didn't like them or you didn't like the way that you were treated. And take those thoughts and use them to become a better leader.
I agree. Kyle David Bass, thanks for joining us. And again, go ahead and check Kyle out at pd-u.com. That's pedi-u.com. And you can learn some great information about pediatrics and listen to his podcast. And it's always great having you here, Kyle. Is there an email address people can reach you at if they want to get in touch?
There is. You can get me at kyle_bates@alum.rit.edu. Or actually, the best way to find me is at my website, kyledavidbates.com.
Awesome, and thank you very much. James, if you were going to have a closing thought, go ahead and share that with us.
Sure, and there's two parts to it. One, on top of everything else, remember why we exist. Remember why you're here, and that's to take care of patients. And as long as you can connect as a leader, the things you're doing to trying to improve the outcomes of patients, then you know at the most granular level, you're doing it right. And as a leader, your job is to facilitate that happening, whether that's dealing with employees or working with budget. You know, if you can connect those dots, you're halfway home. And if you do it where people can see it, then they'll get it.
Awesome. And Patrick?
I totally agree with both the two previous guys, but my thing would be, if you're a new leader, first of all, don't panic. Don't do something. Sit there. Address, analyze before you decide to do anything else. Learn to learn. Realize that there is stuff out there that can help you become a better leader. Don't assume that you know it all, or more importantly, ignore certain issues that may come up. And the other thing is, perception is so critically important in what we do all day, every day. And realize that you cannot be the same person you were as a field medic. Your opinions carry more weight just because of the fact that you have a white shirt on. Perception is reality. And I think that is something that sometimes gets parlayed because they want to be friends. They don't want to be seen as that terrible supervisor, like Kyle was saying. You really need to be respected more than you need to be liked.
And I agree with all the things that you guys said. And, you know, I really appreciate you guys joining us. I learned so much from all of you. And, of course, if we go ahead and remind everyone again, EMS World, Patrick Pianessa has some great articles, Avoid the Potholes, Common Mistakes of the New Leader. Go ahead and read that. Check that out. Always great. And, again, guys, I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you. Ladies and gentlemen, hope you picked up some great information this evening. If you want to go ahead and email us, go ahead and send us an email at emsleadership@gmail.com. If you want to reach me, Chris Subalero, you can reach me at chiefofems@gmail.com. And, of course, Twitter @chiefofems. Until next time, we'll bring you another great leadership topic. You guys enjoy your night.